Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally, 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Ritalin when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that, or a carpenter? What if your plumber said he who fixes his own pipes as a fool for a client? What if your carpenter said he who fixes his own steps as a fool for a client? You know, our common sense ought to tell us that a plumber or carpenter who can't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent. My common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Well, listen to James Nielsen. Now, he's a professor at the Hastings Law School. This is a law professor at a law school. Here's what he said, quote, "It is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed." And it's worse than that. Most of the students actually graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, that it is a cruel hoax, unquote. That's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. That number again, 417-273-4967, and our webpage is georgegordon.org. Do it right now before you forget. Ritalin. God, it's almost a household word, isn't it? Ritalin. Well, Ritalin is a drug that we give to our children to calm them down, and Ritalin is cocaine. In case you wanted to know what you were giving your kid, it's cocaine, coke. Now, on the one hand, we've got this war on drugs, and then we've got this just say no to drugs, and we're trying to teach our children don't take drugs, and then we drug them up with the very drugs that they're not supposed to buy from Joe down on the corner, called Ritalin. In fact, Ritalin is so popular now, it is a designer drug, and it's bought, sold, and traded on the school grounds. Children who take Ritalin have their doses that they turn around and sell for $5 a pill to other children on the playground. Now, isn't that just real special? So I thought as long as we're going to get into the drug scene, we might as well be honest and realistic about it. Americans are drug addicts. The entire nation is a nation of druggies, not just illegal druggies, but legal druggies. In fact, if you're over 65, you're taking six drugs, if you're average. Now, that means that a lot of people that are over 65 take more than six drugs. But it's okay. Those are legal drugs. And of course, if we're drug addicts and we do it legally, well, that's all right. But these drugs all have side effects. There's no such thing as a drug that doesn't have a side effect. All drugs are poison. And when you ingest these poisons, there are consequences that come from it. Now, there are consequences that come from cocaine. I know it's a lot of fun and it's exciting, but there are consequences that come from it. Same thing with marijuana, the same thing with alcohol, same thing with tobacco. I mean, you can smoke tobacco. It's a drug. Nicotine is a drug. You become addicted to it. You need it, and you keep smoking. And at some point in time, you die from the side effects from the nicotine. Now, once in a while, somebody lives to be a ripe old age. My grandmother died at age 88. She smoked a pack of Camel Studs from age 18 to 85. And she'd have been smoking the day she died if she could have lit the cigarette. But she had a stroke when she was 85 that incapacitated her, and she couldn't smoke anymore. Now, if she could quit smoking at age 85, I think she might have lived longer if she'd have quit smoking at age 65, 75, 55, or 45. She might have lived to be 95 or 105. We don't know.
But people are addicted to a number of substances. Many people are addicted to alcohol. Alcohol has a side effect. Alcoholism kills people at an early age. And these other drugs all have a side effect as well. It's just that we're ready, willing, and able to take the risk. You know what I mean? If we don't die within 30 seconds after drinking a drink on the bar, it must be okay. If we can take that prescription drug and it doesn't kill us in an hour or two, well, then obviously it's harmless. And then when people die at age 47, 55, 58, 62, you know, we start looking around and say, well, it must be the doctor's fault. It must be the hospital's fault. It must be any and everybody's fault but our own. Now, these addictions, you know, that we get involved in start off usually at a pretty early age. We are curious at age 12, and that's when I started smoking because I was curious about cigarettes. My dad smoked, and my mom smoked, and so I thought, well, it must be okay. Granny smoked, granddad smoked, Uncle Buster smoked, Uncle Lyle smoked. Nearly everybody smoked when I was a kid, and so pretty natural for me to want to try it, and so I snuck a cigarette or two and made you real dizzy, and well, that felt pretty good, and so I tried it again and again, and so pretty soon the smoking thing got to be a habit. I smoked for 9 years. It was a fun habit. I never smoked a bad cigarette that I can recall or a bad cigar. I smoked for 9 years and I enjoyed every puff. And one day I read an article in the Reader's Digest and it said, hey, this smoking over here causes lung cancer, 15 other diseases, and will probably kill you at an early age. And that was a real surprise because when I was a kid back in the 40s, you know, they used to advertise smoking as being healthful and beneficial. It was good for your health. People that smoked lived longer, happier, more rewarding, and more fulfilled lives. It was the thing to do. Well, Ritalin is in that category now. It is the thing to do. You know, if your kid's not on Ritalin, there's something wrong with your kid. But I want to tell you that when I was a youngster in public school, we didn't have any ADHD. It wasn't allowed. Now, today we accept this thing of ADHD, this is attention deficit disorder, as being a malfunction of your brain, that there's something organically wrong with you, and therefore you need this drug which is going to fix it, going to make it right. Well, when I say that when I was a kid, we didn't allow ADHD, That was bad behavior. There was no bad behavior even in the public schools. There wasn't any bad behavior in the Catholic school. I was assured of that. I never went to Catholic school, and I didn't observe it. But I talked to a lot of my friends who were Catholics in the Catholic school, and they all said to a man, I never talked to one kid come out of Catholic school that when he got into public school wasn't relieved. He said, this is a dream. This is easy. This public school is great because you don't have these nuns over here beating up on you every day. So that Catholic school, you know, they didn't have any ADHD there either. And when I say they didn't have any there, they didn't allow it. I can remember school teachers, particularly Mrs. Wild. She had a rowdy kid one day. It didn't happen very often, but once in a while you get a rowdy kid. And she just went down the aisle, grabbed this kid by his ear, twisted his ear. And when you get your ear twisted, there's pain goes along with that. And this kid yelled, and he screamed, and she grabbed him, and she led him to the principal's office by the ear. Well, I didn't see what happened after she walked out the door, but, you know, she had hold of his ear from his desk to the door, and I presume she held onto his ear until she got him down to the principal's office. Then she came back, and then a little while later, the kid came back with the principal, and the kid sat down in his chair, and I never saw another outburst out of that kid for the rest of the school year. I was in the third grade. That's back in the 1940s. So there was a little ADHD, I guess, but by golly, they just take that right out of you. And then over in the Catholic school, I understand that they got a little rowdier. Those teachers over there in the Catholic school, they didn't put up with any of that crap at all. And so what we thought we were getting away with in the public school, I was informed by Eddie O'Neill and others that, oh, no, they didn't allow that in the Catholic system at all. So is ADHD something that's organic? There's some physical defect, it's genetic or something like that that you got in your brain, or is it just a lack of discipline and training? Has anybody ever thought about that? Just maybe a little lack of discipline and training. Because when I was a kid, you know, you could be taught, you could actually teach a kid, I mean, a human child, you could teach a human child to behave. Now, the people brag about being able to train their dogs, but they can't train their children. And so that tells me then that in 2006, the dogs obviously are more intelligent than the children, at least here in America, because we can't train our children, but we can train our dogs. Now that seems to be kind of a strange set of circumstances, isn't it? We like to talk about human beings as being at the top of the evolutionary pyramid, don't we? We call that the marvels or the wonders of random selection. Well, something's gone wrong with random selection here in the United States because we have gangs, marauding gangs. We have people out on the streets that are just shooting people at random. We didn't have that in the 30s and 40s. We didn't have gangs running around on the streets terrorizing. Not in the 30s and 40s or 20s. And now somebody's going to write me a letter and say, well, let me tell you about Al Capone. Well, let me tell you about this or that. Yeah, there were some exceptions. Yeah, there's always been an exception or two out there. Boy, those were really rare. Billy the Kid was very rare. Today, our country is full of Billy the Kids running around killing people. when Billy the Kid was killed back in 1882, he was an anomaly. That was a wild kid, needed to be dealt with, and the only way to deal with him is to kill him, and so they did, buried the problem. And today you get tens of thousands of those Billy the Kids out here on the street shooting people at random, joining up in gangs and raping, robbing, and pillaging, kidnapping, and so on. Well, is there a solution to that? Or better yet, if there's no solution for the nation, if there's no solution for the world, is there a solution for you and in your family? And I say the answer is, yeah, I think there is. Now, family doctors these days frequently, usually under pressure, and they're under pressure from teachers and social workers who actually know very little about drug therapy and probably understand nothing about the way the international drug cartel operates. But under pressure, doctors prescribe the drug called Ritalin for children who are accused, I say accused, of behaving badly. Or they're reported as not doing well at school. I don't know what well or doing poorly at school is today, but they're reported as not doing well in school. And then they diagnose these children as suffering from something that they call attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. It's known as ADHD. Now, for several decades now, Ritalin and other amphetamine-type drugs have been prescribed for children, their dysfunction, and diagnosis as suffering from various types of brain hyperactivity. Other psychostimulants, which have at one time or another been regarded as competitors to Ritalin, have included dexedrine. So we call these drugs dexedrine, psychostimulants, and Ritalin. Well, I've got a druggist student, and I asked him about that, and he said, well, those are the over-the-counter names for cocaine. So I don't know what you're paying for your Ritalin, but you know, you could probably buy it cheaper down the street, because if you take a look at the drugs that are sold in the over-the-counter trade, you know, where you go into the Rexall or Osco Buttery or some drugstore, they sell for six times more than they sell for on the street. Six times. So if you want to buy cocaine, you can buy it down at your local drugstore. You go to the doctor and you say, I want cocaine. Now, he's not going to sell you cocaine, because you see, that's a street name. But there's an official name for this stuff. And you can get heroin, you can get marijuana, and you get it across the counter at the Rexall store, and they've got a different name for it. They hang these different names on it so that you won't know what this is. So we call this Ritalin, but most of you people don't know that that's cocaine. And you can buy that cocaine for about one-sixth. Whatever you're paying for your Ritalin, you could buy it from Joe the drug dealer down on the corner for about one-sixth what you're paying there at the drugstore. Did you know that? And I guess that's why illegal drugs are so popular, because they're so inexpensive. You know, there's no shortage of supply. Now, for several decades now, Ritalin and other amphetamine-type drugs have been prescribed for children's dysfunction and diagnosed as suffering from various types of brain hyperactivity. Now, in my view, the first problem is that attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and other variations on this hyperactivity theme is a very vague diagnosis, which is often leapt upon by teachers and social workers and parents to excuse and then to explain any unacceptable or uncontrollable behavior. So if you're over here in the restaurant and your kid throws himself on the floor and kicks and screams and throws a wall-eyed fit, it's pretty embarrassing. And most of you parents out there haven't got a clue as to what to do with a kid like that. You're at your wit's end. You say, oh my God, I don't know what causes that. Okay, so let me tell you, it's a lack of discipline and training. And then somebody will say, but he's only 18 months old. Okay, are you telling me that an 18-month-old child is dumber than a 6-month-old puppy? That you don't have any problem training? I mean, you can train a 6-month-old puppy, but you can't train an 18-month-old human? Well, it isn't too surprising, because we've lost our parenting skills. At least here in America, we've lost our parenting skills. Now, that isn't everywhere. Arab children don't have that problem. In fact, this ADHD seems to be something that is uniquely American. They're prescribing Ritalin over in Europe, you know, for this ADHD also, but not very often. In fact, it's about 50 times more often prescribed here in the United States than it is in Europe. And outside of Europe and the United States, ADHD is unknown around the world. I mean, they don't know what the hell that is. You know, in Afghanistan and in Georgia or Brazil, they don't have that problem there. So that ought to tell you a little something. I mean, there's some kind of an ADHD virus running around here in the United States, and it's leaked over a little bit into Europe, but you don't find it in the rest of the world. And that's because most people around the world are able to train their children. I mean, they may be poor as church mice, you know, and they may be dumb as fence posts, but at least they can train a kid. I don't know whether they can train dogs or not, but they can train kids. Now, parents of children whose behavior is in any way regarded as different or unusual are often encouraged to believe that their child is suffering from a disease for two simple reasons. The first reason is that it's more socially acceptable to give a child a pseudoscientific label than to have to admit that he or she may simply be badly behaved. I mean, do you want to admit, my kid is a little tyrant and I don't know how to train him. I'm an incompetent at child rearing. I haven't got a clue as to what to do with this little monster. In this country, we have a little saying. We call it the terrible twos. I raised five children and I never had a one with the terrible twos more than once. Terrible twos. And that's because I followed the biblical prescription for the terrible twos. Let me give you seven of them here. Let me give them to you. In Proverbs 20, verse 11, here's the God of Abraham. Now, this isn't the ordinary God that you hear about in Sunday school and church, you know, this, like you Christians, you know. This is a different God. This is a different critter. You never heard of this guy. But he said, even a child is known by his doings, whether his work is pure and whether it be right. In Proverbs 22, verse 6, he says, you train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. I was trained up. When I was a little kid, I was trained up in the way I should go. I'm an old man, and I still behave the way my dad trained me. And there was an old pope back in the Middle Ages. I think it was Pope Clement, as I recall, something like that. And he said, you give me a kid till he's 7 years old, and he'll be a Catholic for life. Train a child up in the way he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart from it. So when you train children up in a particular religious ideology, I mean, they may not follow that. I can show you 100 kids that I was raised with that called themselves Catholics. Hell, they never go to church. And they wouldn't be caught dead, you know, doing their rosary beads. And so, but if you ask them, you know, well, what's your religion? They'll, I'm a Catholic. I'm a Baptist. I'm a Methodist. I'm a Nazarene. To, you know, they can be old men in their 70s doddering around, you know, strutting around with a cane for crying out loud. Just ask them, well, what's your religion? I'm a Catholic. I haven't been to church for 40 years, but he knows what he is. But that's because he was trained up that way. It's the only thing he knows. You know, it kind of makes you wonder, you know, could you train a kid to go into a restaurant and behave while you're eating a meal for about 60 minutes? When I was a young man in my 20s yet, and then I had a young wife, you know, she was in her 20s. And, you know, like young people do, we had several children, and one time we wanted to go out and eat. So we happened to be up in Vallejo, California, and we stopped at this restaurant, pretty splashy place. You know, you have to have coat and tie. And I happened to have a coat and tie, so we went in there, and we had two little children. I think my oldest boy, my firstborn, his name was Ted, and I think he was maybe 4 years old. I had a little girl named Kathleen. I think she's about two. So about 2 and 4 years old. And when you went in there, you could see, it was just looking around the room, everybody in there was wearing, you know, pretty nice clothes, you know, suit and tie. All these people are professionals. They're doctors and lawyers and people like that, you know. And there was just a hush came over the entire restaurant when we walked in with these two little kids. Nobody goes to a nice restaurant with children. I mean, you might take them into Denny's or McDonald's or something, but my God, you'd never take them into a place where you have to have a coat and tie. And I noticed that when we walked in, and I leaned over to my wife and I said, it looks like we have stopped conversation in here. And she smiled and she said, yeah. So the maitre d' came over and he was visibly distressed. Visibly. I mean, he didn't know whether to tell me to get the hell out of there, you fool, and don't come back, or yes or no or whatever. So when I said, we'd like a table for four and we're going to need a booster for the little girl, or no, I need a high chair for the little girl and a booster for the little boy, they didn't have boosters and high chairs in this restaurant. They don't, children don't go in there. So we had to improvise. And so they worked out a couple of deals there where the children could sit. I had to sit next to one, and my wife sat next to the youngest, the little girl. And then, of course, I got it. And my boy is sitting on, it was kind of an improvised booster. Didn't have the regular thingy over there, you know. And so here we are. We're sitting there, and they put us over in a corner. I mean, way, way over in a corner, as far away from everybody as we could get. And so there we are sitting over in the corner. And pretty, you know, things went on, and we ordered. And so I ordered for the children, and we sat there, and conversation returned, of course, and you know, people are, but you could look around the room, you could see people looking over at us, you know, they're eyeing us, they're watching us, what's going to happen over there in the corner? And so, you know, in these kind of fancy restaurants, you know, mealtime is four or five or six courses, and it takes an hour, hour and a half to eat, and, you know, and so we're there for about an hour and a half, and we're eating, and the children have not acted up. They haven't screamed and yelled. They haven't jumped up and down. They haven't thrown their food on the floor. They haven't tipped their cereal bowl upside down over their heads. And they're just sitting there quietly and eating, and they're not disturbing anybody. And it was a real shock. I mean, everybody in the restaurant just absolutely shocked at what was going on there. And, of course, you know, there are people leaving and there are people coming in. And of course, when the people were coming in and when they'd see us over in the corner, two little kids in here, you know, they're all just gasp. Oh, my God, we wanted to come out and have a nice evening and look at over there in the corner. Some fool has come in here with little kids. Now, when I was raised, we had an old adage that said, children should be seen and not heard. Children should be seen and not heard. And so a badly behaved child reflected very poorly upon the parents and their ability at child rearing. Yeah, once in a while a kid would misbehave, but then his dad take him out and bring him back, and when he brought him back, you know, there wouldn't be any more misbehavior. And so being raised in an atmosphere like that, I thought, well, I should probably raise my children up the same way. And so I raised my children up pursuant to these biblical proverbs. Like Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from it. I'm going to underline that for you. The rod of correction. What do you think a rod of correction is? Well, my old granny, she used to have a stick. My Aunt Bessie had a switch. And if you'd asked me at age 4, 5, 6, you know, which would you rather get spanked with? It was the stick. It hurt a lot less than Aunt Bessie's switch. You know, Aunt Bessie, you know, dummy. And she had this switch, usually a willow switch. Oh, God, that thing would sting. Boy, I'll tell you this. When Aunt Bessie said, sit down and shut up, you just sat down, folded your hands, and said, yes, ma'am. And of course, I was raised in an era when you had to say, yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. And if you were to say something like, yeah, oh, my God, you would only do it once. But see, I was a precocious child. And what I would observe other children when they would answer their parents, yeah. And then I would watch the repercussions, and I'd say, oh, my God, I better not test that on my dad. I better not test that on my mother. And so some children are smarter than others, and they don't get whipped near as much. That's because they can learn from the mistakes of other children who make mistakes in front of their parents. And, of course, the entire society was built like that. I mean, it wasn't just my parents. I mean, it was the Mitchell kids and the Wagner kids and the O'Neill kids and all of them. And you just, and that's because if the Mitchell kids acted up, you know, in church or something like that, you know, look at the Mitchell kids. What the hell's the matter with that old man Mitchell? He can't keep his kids in line. And these people, whether they were Mormons or Baptists or whether they were Catholics or Protestants or Jews or what, it didn't make any difference because they all believed in God and they all believed in the book of Proverbs and training up children by these seven Proverbs there. And so in Proverbs 23, verses 13 and 14, we read, withhold not correction from the child, for if you beat him with the rod, I'm going to underline that, if you beatest him, B-E-A-T-E-S-T, beatest him with the rod. Now today, nobody beats his kid with a rod. We live in a very permissive society here in America. And I can't ever remember seeing anybody spank their child or grab him by the ear or slap him up alongside the head. Nobody does that. And you can go anywhere in our society, and there's kids that are just misbehaving, and they go into a store, and they pick things up, and they touch everything that they come in contact with, and they're loud and rude and obnoxious, and they're out of control. And, I mean, that's the norm. Sir. But if you beat him with the rod, God says he shall not die. You shall beat him with the rod and shall deliver his soul from hell. Isn't that amazing? Proverbs 23, verses 24 and 25. No, I'm not talking about Jesus. You know, sweet Jesus, he probably would never touch a kid. Just let this kid grow up like a weed in a crack of a sidewalk, you know. But I'm telling you about this God of Abraham, the God of the Bible. I mean, this guy is just weird. Isn't he? He says you have to take a rod and beat your kid. You know, that's why they threw him out of the public schools, you know, and threw the Bible and Ten Commandments out. Because social lady, she doesn't want anybody whipping their kids. Proverbs 23, the father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begets a wise child shall have joy of him. And thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice. Proverbs 29:15, the rod of reproof, the rod and reproof give wisdom. My dad used to use a belt on me, and I can tell you very plainly that the belt and reproof give wisdom. I grew up to be a very wise child, very wise child. When my dad said, come here, yes, sir. And when my dad said, sit down, yes, sir. I could sit down, I could stand up, I could come here, I could go there. I could do just exactly what I was told. And I was well-trained. Just like soldiers in the Army, you know. They take these recruits in, they teach them, you know, how to march, how to about face, how to stand up, sit down, clean their guns, and do all kinds of things that they normally wouldn't do, you know, down at the battlefield mall, playing video games or something like that. Those kids in there, you know, they couldn't do that. But when I was a kid, we could. And it says, but a child left to himself brings his mother to shame. A child that is undisciplined, a child that is not trained, brings his mother shame. And I'm sure that all these young mothers are really ashamed in the mall when their kids are kicking and screaming and jumping up and down and ranting and raving and breaking things in the stores. You know, I'm sure that they're ashamed. If they're not, they ought to be. They ought to be. And then the last one, Proverbs 29:21, he that delicately bringeth up his servant from a child shall have him become his son at length. When you bring up a child, bring up his servant from a child. You know, the children ought to serve their parents. And when parents get to be old in America, we take our parents and we institutionalize them. We put them in old folks' homes. That isn't the design mechanism. A child should be a servant of his parents and take care of his parents when they get to be old and full of years. But we don't do that here in this country. And I guess that's because when you don't train a child up in the way he should go, when he gets to be old, he can't follow something he hasn't been trained to do, can he? All right, we're talking about Ritalin. And is it a genetic disorder, or is it something that's biological, or is it just kind of bad upbringing? And we'll take a look at that a little bit more when we come back. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, you can just go to our webpage, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. You get all the information that we've got there. And there's a bunch. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right. Now, I told you a little story here about my two oldest children sitting in the restaurant there in Vallejo, California, over in the corner. It went about an hour and a half. And the children had behaved flawlessly. And as I recall, this was their first outing to a pretty nifty restaurant like that. And we had worked hard to train our children. And when I said, sit still, or shush up, or be quiet, or speak now, my children would do that. It's kind of like a dog, you know. You say, come here, Spot, and Spot comes, and you say, sit down, Spot, and Spot, sit, Spot, and the dog would sit. And then you say, sit up, and he'll sit up, and then speak, and he'll bark, and you feed him a biscuit. You know, you train this dog. You ever seen people train their dogs? Okay. Well, I trained my children, same way I trained a dog, same way my dad trained me. I know that sounds strange to American ears, but, you know, my children can be trained just like dogs. Just like a dolphin, you know, you can train a dolphin. I mean, you got this dumb fish swimming around in a tank, and we can train him, but we can't train a kid to sit down and shut up, fold his hands, keep quiet. But I want to surprise all of you people out there in Radio Land. It can actually be done, and I did it. And I did it with my children, and my dad did it with me, and my dad's dad did it with him, and so on down the line, you know, going back several generations. And it wasn't just the Gordons either. It was the Mitchells, Wagners, O'Neills, all the children that I was raised with as a little kid. They were all well-trained, too. And we could go to a restaurant, and we could sit there quietly and without causing any disturbance to the rest of the patrons and without throwing our food on the floor. God, I go into some of these restaurants, and I watch these people, and their kids are just pigs. My dog doesn't make as big a mess as these children that I see in a restaurant. And I wonder if those kids are ever going to be able to learn how to eat. I mean, if you don't learn how to eat by the time you're 6-7 years old and you get food, you know, down here on the floor, I mean, it would be a paradise for a little lap dog, you know, down on the floor, licking up the spaghetti and all the crap, you know, that goes down on the floor from these kids. And boy, if I'd dropped something on the floor like that, my granny would have been up and wiped it up with a wet rag and something like that, and then she'd teach me how to eat. Well, anyway, by the time I was 3-4 years old, I learned how to eat, and my children could eat. I got 1-4 and 1-2 sitting in a nice restaurant, no food on the floor, and they're eating quite nicely. I leaned over to my wife, and I said, do you want a chance at dessert? And she said, yeah, let's try that. And so we had crepe Suzettes. And so the maitre d' puts on the crepe Suzettes, and it's quite a little show, in case you've never seen this trick done before. You've probably seen it in the movies. You know, they come out in a little cart, and they make this flaming dessert right here at your table. And it's a great thrill for little children to watch baked Alaska or crepe Suzettes being made, or Jerry's Jubilee, you know, right at the table. Because there's fire, you know, going on, and that's a great show, you know, little children just laughing, you know, they had a great time. And so we went ahead, and we had dessert. And when they served us dessert, somebody started clapping in the restaurant, you know, clap, 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 and pretty soon everybody in the restaurant was applauding these two little children sitting at the table for an hour and a half during dinner. I don't know, 3, 4, 5 courses of dinner. I don't remember exactly how many, but, you know, long, drawn-out dinner. And all these people had been eyeing and watching us, you know, a couple of young parents. I don't think we were more than 25 or 6 or 7 or 8 years old, something like that. We weren't 30 yet, just young couple. Had two little kids, and the little children were trained up. And these people are older people. See, these are people like my dad, you know, professional people, doctors, lawyers, and engineers, who were applauding the fact that these young people back in the 1960s now, trained up their children, and they could come to a restaurant without disturbing anybody else in there. And somebody got to clapping, and so then everybody else chimed in, and it made us feel pretty good, you know, young couple sitting there with their kids. And I told my wife, I said, well, now, see, training these children up and teaching them how to behave got us a round of applause, made us feel pretty good that evening, and we ate our dessert, and we left the restaurant. And I can remember taking my children, you know, because they got older and older, of course. By the time they get to be 14 years old, we expect them to be able to sit there at the table and look intelligent and eat. And so I wanted to point that out. My children never had ADHD. Isn't that strange? I didn't have it. My dad didn't have it. My granddad didn't have it. We could sit there and fold our hands. Now, children from time to time do get a little rambunctious. Now, I was a kid once, you know, and I was a little rambunctious a couple of times. And I can remember somebody grabbing a hold of me. My granddad used to use this term. He said, you need to come back down to earth. He'd tell me that. He'd say, you need to come back down to earth, just before he'd unwind on me. And then after I heard that, you know, you need to come back down to earth, you know, from that point on, if I heard the words, you need to come back down to earth, then that was the signal that the next time I speak to you, it's going to hurt real bad. And so, you know, unless you were a brain dead kid, whatever it was that you were doing, you would cease and desist immediately. And then, of course, you'd probably save a lot of pain and suffering. Now, I know some of you got there sitting there saying, well, this guy just beats his kids. This guy's a child abuser over here. And I want to take exception to that, because I don't think that discipline is child abuse. And I got that right from God himself. Now, of course, you're probably smarter than God. Most of you people out there are, as evidenced by the fact that you don't follow these laws from the scripture. You have your own standards. And that's the point that I'm bringing up with this Ritalin. See, when we have a kid that's rambunctious, we say this kid's got some kind of a biologic disorder and we need to drug him up with cocaine. Now, cocaine is witchcraft. Now, most Americans would rather practice witchcraft with cocaine on their children than they would to train them up, beat them, spank them, use a switch on them to control their behavior. So to control behavior in America, we use witchcraft and drugs rather than discipline and training. God says use discipline and training, and we say, no, God, you made a mistake. We're going to use witchcraft and drugs. Now, it's your choice. I mean, after all, you've got a right to choose, and it's God himself in Deuteronomy 30 that told you. He said, now choose. You're going to follow me or you want to follow Baal? And Americans have made their choice. We're going to follow Baal. So as a reporter, I want to point out to you, as an old reporter, I mean, I'm an old man now, saying I'm going to point out to you that there's a cause and effect relationship that comes from this. I mean, you can feed these kids drugs if you want to, but there's an ultimate end that comes from that. Great nations and civilizations and empires are not made from drug addicts. It's not made or composed of people who are so out of control that they can't regulate their bodily functions. Now, America became a great nation, a great empire, and it was made by people. And if you go back to the 1880s and 90s and the early 20th century, those people were tough. My grandmother, when my Aunt Bessie was born in 1902 or 1904, was stuck up in a place in Northern California up in the mountains. I'll think of the name of the place in a second. And she got snowed in. That's what happened. And her husband, old Lou Stanley, he couldn't get up there. You know, they were on horses and wagons in those days. And, I mean, they had a big snow, and it's kind of like the Donner Party, you know. I mean, they got stuck over there on Donner Lake, and, you know, and they couldn't go back, and they couldn't go forward, and they got snowed in, and they were stuck there. Well, my granny was stuck, and she had two little kids, and I think Aunt Bessie was third. And it's about 1902, and she was pregnant, and she delivered. She had a baby by herself up in the mountains. And she was up there. That baby was 6 weeks old by the time they got in there to get her out. How do you like that? Baby 6 weeks old. And she said that they were down to cornmeal. They weren't short of food, but all they had left was cornmeal. And so she was up there taking care of. Now, those are tough ladies. You know, those women back in those days are pretty tough. I mean, most of you women today, you know, you can't even have babies. 35% of America's women today can't even have a baby. They have cesareans. They have to go to the hospital and have them cut out. Can you believe that? A natural bodily function has now been replaced by emergency surgery. That's how weak America's women have become. If you look back in the book of Exodus, those women were so tough that they would squat down and have a baby, stand up and walk off, just like a cow does today. So great nations, civilizations, and empires, you know, are made by tough people, self-reliant people, people that are disciplined, know what they want, know how to get it, and get out and go to work and produce it. They're not lazy people. You know, lazy people are not empire builders. Drug addicts are not empire builders. Sodomites are not empire builders. Empires are built by a different breed of people. And Americans today are not the same breed of people that we were 100 or 200 years ago. And that's why you see America on the slippery slope headed down. And I would contend that feeding your children drugs is not going to ameliorate that problem. I mean, you're not climbing back to the top of the mountain on the back of a cocaine now, are you? Now, this cocaine, by the way, is a drug that is addictive. It's an addictive drug. And so we're turning out drug addicts. Every child on Ritalin is a coke head by the time he's 10 years old. This kid is hooked on cocaine by age 10. Now, there are several million of these children. We have about 50 million children in the United States. And out of the 50 million, we have several million. I don't know the exact number, but they're talking about 4 or 5 million children now on Ritalin or some other drug like it. Might not be Ritalin, might be what they call this Dexedrine, or maybe there's a third one here. Well, it's about 10%. So you have 50 million kids, and you got about 5 million of them on drugs, about 10% of the children. Now, the objective, I guess, is to get 100% of them on drugs. I would imagine. The drug manufacturer, I'm sure, would like to have all 50 million on drugs, this drug, because after all, he's just in the business of selling the drugs. And then the doctors, they get paid for prescribing it, so I'm sure that the doctors are in favor of it. And of course, the teachers, they're in favor of it, and the social lady, she's in favor of it. So you've got the government and the government's agents and the government's proxies and the government's corporations. They're all making money off of this stuff, and they're selling it to your kid. Now, you just get mad as hell. If I was out here selling your kid cocaine down on the street, you'd get mad as hell at me. But you take your kid into the doctor, he prescribes Ritalin, you take it home, and you feed your kid cocaine at home. That seems to be all right. I'm missing the point. Is it because I'm a private entrepreneur selling your kid cocaine that it's offensive to you? Or is it the cocaine itself that's offensive to you? And if it's the cocaine itself, then why are you giving him Ritalin? So the only thing I can figure is you're just mad as hell because I'm making a profit selling your kid cocaine. And hell, I can sell your kid cocaine at 1/6 the cost that you're spending. It seemed like to me that that'd be the more logical choice. You know, let your kid buy it from Joe down on the corner. That's a lot cheaper. And he's just as much a cokehead from Joe down on the corner as he is from the Rexall Pharmacy. Is this stuff good for your kid? Does this stuff, does this Ritalin cure the ADHD? I mean, do you give him this prescription for 6 weeks, and at the end of 6 weeks, the kid is cured, and he never again has to go back to taking Ritalin? Or is this Ritalin something that you put your kid on, and he stays on it forever? He never gets off of it. If so, when does he get off of it? When he's 18? He gets to be 18. Isn't he by now addicted to this stuff? I mean, it's addictive. When other people take these illegal drugs like heroin and cocaine and so on, they become addicted, and they call it a recreational drug, and they keep them on it, or they try to stay on it forever, or they get onto other drugs like ecstasy or this methamphetamine or something else. Honest to God, do you really think that giving your kid cocaine and turning him into a cokehead, a drug addict at age 10 or 6, I mean, to start him off in school, you know, at age 6 on this cocaine, do you honest to God think that's a good idea? I'm not here to tell you that you should or shouldn't do it. I take a neutral position. It's not for me to decide whether your kid should have cocaine or not. I presume that you're an adult. I presume that you know what's best for your child. And I wouldn't give any of my children cocaine. And if I knew that Joe, the coke dealer down on the corner, was selling my kid cocaine, I'd be just mad as a wet hen. And if I thought that social lady over in the public school was recommending, prescribing, and selling my kid cocaine, I'd be just as mad as a wet hen. And if I saw somebody down on the street selling pornography and trying to pervert the morals of my children, I'd be just as mad as a wet hen. And if I sent my kid to public school and there was some pervert in there in sex education class teaching my daughter to be a whore and my son to be a sodomite and then call that an alternative lifestyle, I'd be just mad as a wet hen. That's why I wouldn't send my kid to a public school, because they're full of drugs, legal and illegal, and they're full of perversion. Perversion. Perverts are in the public schools. And I say perverts. People that prescribe and teach the use of cocaine are perverts. Whether they're social ladies with degrees after their names, or they're school teachers and their pillars in their community, people that teach little children or provide little children with cocaine are perverts. Let's just hang the label on them. If Joe, the coke dealer on the corner, is a pervert, then why in the hell is it that social lady, doctors, and teachers aren't perverts for prescribing the exact same drug to a 10-year-old kid? Then there's a second reason here. Remember, the first reason over here is that your kid may be behaving badly, and so if he's badly behaved, we don't want to be labeled as being dummies that can't train up a child, and so we say, well, our kid has this ADHD problem. Then there's a second reason that we want to give our kids Ritalin. When a child has been given a label, it's possible to offer a treatment. Commonly, it will be one, such as a drug, which offers someone a profit. That's right. There's profits in this. ADHD, which is also known as attention deficit disorder, or ADD, hyperkinetic child syndrome, minimal brain damage, minimal brain dysfunction in children, minimal cerebral dysfunction, and psychoorganic syndrome in children, is a remarkably nonspecific disorder. You got that? It's a remarkably nonspecific disorder. The symptoms which characterize this disorder may include a chronic history of a short attention span, distractibility, emotional liability, impulsivity, moderate to severe hyperactivity, minor neurological signs, and abnormal EEG. Learning may or may not be impaired. Now read that nonsensical list of symptoms carefully, and you'll find that just about any child alive could probably be described as suffering from ADHD. Now listen to this again. The symptoms which characterize this disorder may include a chronic history of short attention span. What child isn't impulsive occasionally, or what child can't be distracted? Emotional lability, impulsivity, moderate to severe hyperactivity. What kid from time to time doesn't get kind of wired and jumps up and down, hoops and hollers, and runs around three times like a dog chasing his tail? Isn't that part and parcel of childhood? I mean, that's what I've been observing. You know, I was a kid once, and I did that. My other childhood friends, they were all kids, and they all did that. There wasn't any ADHD in 1930 or 1940. That's something that came about when somebody came up with a drug and they needed something to use to sell it. And they have some reason to sell this stuff. And they did. And they are. And they're making a ton of money. And they're making a ton of money off of you. And they're making a ton of money off of your child. And my question is, do you really think that that's wise, to let these people make that money off of your kid as you turn your kid into a drug addict? Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, but why is it that a guy is a drug addict when he's buying it from Joe, the dealer down on the street corner, but he's not a drug addict if he's buying it over the Rexall drugstore counter as a prescription? It's cocaine, children. Ritalin is cocaine. Did anybody tell you that? All right, let me wrap it up here. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. All of these law programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Hey, I'm out of time. We'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course, until then. Thanks for listening, and good night, friends.